While a strong motivation doesn't necessarily accelerate your learning or improve your memory, without it, you won't spend enough time learning Chinese. So how can you stay motivated for months, years, or even decades? Hello and welcome to the Hacking Chinese podcast. In this week's episode, we are going to talk about motivation, and especially long-term motivation. And I want to start by making an observation that might seem trivial, but that I think is actually quite important. And that is that people who fail to learn Chinese do so because they give up, not because they keep trying without succeeding. The reason is that learning Chinese is difficult in the same sense that walking 1,000 miles is difficult, not in the sense that climbing a wall is difficult. As I discussed in episode 155, these activities are different because when you are climbing, each step you take, as it were, is rather difficult, whereas when you walk 1,000 miles, each step in itself is very easy, but the difficulty lies in the number of steps you have to take in total. So this is what I mean when I say that people who fail to reach their goals do so because they stop trying, not because they try really hard and then fail. So how do you keep walking week after week, month after month, and year after year? That is what we are going to talk about in this episode. If you started learning Chinese because you wanted to rather than being forced by circumstances, you started with a strong motivation to learn. You could, after all, have learned other things or chosen other languages or maybe something completely different, but you chose Chinese and you did so for a reason. As a beginner, the learning experience itself will be rewarding and motivating in many cases because you can feel that your competence is increasing day by day as you learn new words, you can say new things, and you can communicate better in Chinese. However, the more you learn, the less you will notice each new thing you learn, and the sense of steadily getting better will fade away. By this time, the language will also feel less exotic and less new, and therefore also maybe less interesting. This drop in motivation often coincides with reaching the intermediate plateau, where it feels like you're no longer making progress, no matter how much time you invest. If you want advice on how to traverse the intermediate plateau, beyond the motivational things we're going to talk about today, you can check out episode 48. It is of course true that we are all different, so some of you might reach this dip in motivation before the intermediate level, and some of you much later, but the point is that you can rarely rely on the same type of motivation that you used when you first started learning Chinese to power yourself all the way to mastery or whatever long-term goals you have set for yourself. Questions about what drives us and makes us behave the way we do have always interested me, and it's something I think all people think about occasionally. Why is it so hard to do the things we tell ourselves that we want to do, and why do we often do other things instead? Naturally, there has been a lot of research into motivation in general, and also into motivation for learning second languages in particular. The most well-known one is probably Zoltán Dernyé's motivational theories, such as the L2 motivational self system, which I will probably write about later, but it is not what I'm going to talk about today. Instead, in this episode, I'm going to focus on a framework called self-determination theory, developed by Edward Deci and Richard Ryan from the 1980s and onwards. This theoretical framework now encompasses a huge amount of research done over more than 4 decades by many, many more than Deci and Ryan who launched it in the first place. While self-determination theory was not developed specifically for language learning, it is a framework I use a lot when teaching professional development courses and when talking with students about motivation in general, even though I rarely teach the whole theory and pick the bits that are the most relevant, which is what we will do in this episode as well. If you want a good overview for how self-determination theory can be applied to language learning and language teaching, I can recommend an article by McEwen and Olga Baldwin from 2019, and I'll put all these references in the written article on Hacking Chinese. So the core of self-determination theory is that people are driven by 3 basic psychological needs: autonomy, competence, and relatedness. These are universal, and when satisfied, they create not just intrinsic motivation, but also psychological well-being in general. Self-determination theory puts a lot of emphasis on intrinsic motivation as opposed to extrinsic motivation. So just to briefly explain the words here, intrinsic motivation is motivation that comes from inside you, and extrinsic motivation is the opposite, it is motivation that is imposed from the outside. To explain the spectrum from extrinsic motivation to intrinsic motivation, I have included a figure from the McEwen and Olga Baldwin paper I just mentioned in the written article on Hacking Chinese, but I will summarize it here. So the figure shows different types of motivation ranging from extrinsic motivation to the left and intrinsic motivation to the right. And then it also gives examples and explanations for six different types of motivation in this spectrum. To give you an idea of what this is about, let's look at two examples. So at the extrinsic end of the spectrum, we have a motivational type called external regulation. So these are things you are more or less forced to do. Maybe by law, you have to go to school and there you have to choose a language and then you ended up with Chinese. Or you have some other external pressure that is very strong that forces you to do something. The authors also include an example for language learners for each category, and for external regulation, the example is, I have no other choice but to learn this language. So let's look at the opposite end of the spectrum, where we have intrinsic motivation or intrinsic regulation. So this is when your motivation is fully internalized, and you're learning Chinese because you're interested in it, or just because you enjoy it, or you find that the experience is inherently satisfactory for some reason. And the quote from a language learner with this type of motivation is, learning a new language is a worthwhile task. And here I would like to add a worthwhile task in itself, for its own sake. Naturally, there are all sorts of motivations between these two extremes, but I'm not going to go through the entire figure here, so if you want to have a look, it is in the article on Hacking Chinese. The article in which this figure was first published is also freely available, and I have a link to it from the article on Hacking Chinese as well. So this dialectical between intrinsic motivation on the one hand and extrinsic motivation on the other is a main focus of research within self-determination theory, and it was indeed this type of research that spawned the whole framework in the first place. In general, research has shown that extrinsic motivation can work, but intrinsic motivation tends to last longer. This probably matches your own experience, as I think most of us can find examples where we have been driven to do something mostly to get good grades, earn some extra money, or maybe impress someone, but where this type of motivation is often short-lived. I mean, yes, we do work to earn money to survive, but beyond that, external rewards can only do so much. Now, compare this with socializing with people you love or indulging in one of your favorite hobbies. These are activities you engage in because you enjoy them for their own sake, not to reap some external reward or because you're forced to. Self-determination theory is a framework which consists of several mini-theories, and here we're only going to talk about one of them, and that is the basic psychological needs theory, and it's related to the three psychological needs I mentioned earlier of autonomy, competence, and relatedness. So let's have a closer look at what these are and how they can power a lifelong interest in learning Chinese. First, we have autonomy, which is about being in control of your learning situation and your actions within it. Depending on in what kind of situation you're learning Chinese, autonomy might or might not be an issue. So if you're in formal education and you mainly study Chinese in a classroom, autonomy might be a huge issue. But if you're studying Chinese largely on your own, independently, and you are the boss, you decide what to do and not to do, then autonomy is probably satisfied without you even needing to try to. This episode is not meant to be about formal education specifically, but since my day job is actually about language teaching in a formal context, I do think that this is a major issue and something that people should take more note of. Students, and particularly younger students, don't have much say in what they do, how they do it, and most of their days are controlled by other people, such as their parents, society in general, or school. Also, as you have probably noticed, the framework is called self-determination theory, and that of course strongly implies that autonomy is important. The second psychological need is competence, and that is about feeling that you're able to operate effectively within the activities you perform. It's worth noting that this is only indirectly linked to language proficiency, as how competent you feel is much more about the tasks you engage in and what your expectations are of how good your Chinese is, rather than how good your Chinese is objectively. As many teachers are fond of saying, it's not about how difficult the language is, it's what you ask students to do with it. This means that as a beginner, you can feel competent even though you only know 50 words because you know how to use those, but you can still feel incompetent as an advanced student even though you clearly know many more words than the beginner. It's all about what you expect yourself to be able to do and what kind of tasks you set for yourself. The third psychological need is relatedness, and this is about connecting with other people and finding meaning through social relationships. We all know that humans are social animals, and it shouldn't be a surprise that this then is a driving factor behind motivation. This relatedness can be with fellow learners, or it could be with native speakers, or maybe your teacher. The desire to fit into a social context, often called integrative motivation, can be extremely powerful, but elusive if you are studying in your home country. So, to keep motivated in the long run, it's important to pay attention to these psychological needs and make sure that they are met as far as possible. So, now that we know what these psychological needs are, let's look at each of them and see how they relate to learning Chinese. And let's start with autonomy. As I already mentioned, the importance of focusing on autonomy differs depending on the situation in which you're learning Chinese. If you're enrolled in a course where your teacher decides everything and you have a strict curriculum that basically dictates everything you do, you have basically no autonomy. But if you're studying independently and can do whatever you want, then this is automatically satisfied. Even though I think students should strive to be as independent as possible, it's advised to be enrolled in some kind of course, even if that shouldn't be the only thing you're doing. When you study Chinese in a formal educational setting, it is important to take control of your own learning and not just outsource the responsibility to your teacher or to the syllabus. The problem with this is that your teacher and syllabus have different goals in mind than you have for learning Chinese. For example, they need to design a course that is teachable, and they have to have exams that are easy to grade and so on. And getting good grades, as I've said many times before, is not the same as being good at Chinese, and don't confuse the two. I have discussed all these things before in various articles and episodes, and as usual, I'll put links to these in the show notes. It's important to note that while being autonomous is great, you also need what you want so that you can direct your learning in the right direction. One way of doing this is to write down your goals for learning Chinese, and then check what skills you need to reach those goals, and then compare these with the aims of the course that you are in. Which skills and areas are covered by this course? Which areas do I need to focus on my own? How can I adjust my learning to reach my goals? But the important thing is to realize that just because you follow a course, it does not mean you will automatically reach your goals. And this is something I do talk about in two of my courses, so Unlocking Chinese, the ultimate course for beginners, and then Hacking Chinese, a practical guide to learning Mandarin, which is for more advanced students, and I will share links to these in the show notes as well. Before we leave autonomy, I'd also like to mention that even if you are studying Chinese in an environment which is highly controlled by somebody else, you can still make meaningful decisions about how you do things, and there are ways of tailoring the learning experience to your specific preferences and goals within the institutional framework you are studying in. For example, you're often free to choose how to study, and you can always add things you really want to learn even if they are not part of the curriculum. Still, autonomy is about meaningful choices, so if your teacher only allows you to choose whether to write in blue or green, this doesn't really make you more autonomous. So let's move on to competence and see how focusing on that can help you stay motivated to learn Chinese in the long run. The more I learn and teach Chinese, the more I realize how important it is to manage the difficulty of the learning activities. If you make an activity too hard, most people will lose interest as they are not able to complete the task and feel bad about their inability to do so. Naturally, this is not limited to formal education, but an inability to use Chinese in a context where you think you ought to be able to use it can also make you feel bad, and this is something we talked about in an earlier episode called Why Your Chinese Isn't As Good As You Think It Ought to Be, which was episode 64. One good way to boost competence, as I've already mentioned, is to limit the activity. If you focus on a smaller part of the language, that makes it easier to master the skills you need to perform well in that area, and that will make you feel more competent. A good example of this is beginners learning to learn Chinese in Chinese, so basically mastering classroom language and asking questions in Chinese and all these good things. Feeling that you can use the language to learn more of the language feels good, and you're also able to increase the amount of Chinese that you speak. More advanced students can use various other techniques, such as narrow reading and listening, which we talked about in episode 151. This is when you limit your input by, say, for example, focusing on a specific topic. So you read 5 articles about the same person, or you listen to 5 news broadcasts about the same event. And gradually you will understand more and you will learn the vocabulary needed to deal with these areas in Chinese. But like I said, check out episode 151 for a complete discussion about that. I also think that feeling competent is a matter of managing expectations. If you think that you'll be able to learn Chinese as quickly as you learned Spanish, or that you will reach a near-native level in 2 years, you're probably going to feel bad about your studies almost the entire time. You can also lower expectations, which might sound weird, shouldn't we aim high? But I think there are ways of lowering expectations that feel natural and work quite well. So one example of this is to learn Chinese by playing certain games. And so my favorite example is games where you are supposed to describe a word, allowing your teammates to guess the word, but you are not allowed to say the word. Now, if I gave you the task to describe words in Chinese, this is not easy. I mean, this is what lexicographers do, and that is not something that makes us feel competent, because it's genuinely quite hard. However, if I put it in the frame of a game where you're supposed to do this for fun and also include a time limit, you are supposed to explain as many words as you can in, say, 1 minute. Nobody expects you to do wonders here, not even yourself. It's okay to make mistakes as long as you can get the meaning across. And so this is one way of lowering expectations, of making it feel more okay to be less accurate and focus more on communication. Generally speaking, I would say that most activities that are related to fluency development, and that's when you know almost all the language, you're just trying to get better at using it, is quite good for fostering competence. You are, after all, not encountering lots of things you don't know, but just want to get better at what you already know. This is something we discussed in episode 99, so check that out if you want more ideas. Let's continue with the third psychological need, that of relatedness, and see how that can help us power our Chinese learning. As mentioned, humans are social beings, and it's not strange that our relationships with other people are important, and if we can incorporate this into language learning in different ways, it will be immensely helpful. I think there are three groups of people which are most relevant for us language learners. And the first is fellow students, so that's your classmates or study buddies or other people who learn Chinese alongside you, and who you can team up with. This is great for motivation, I mean, you share the same goals and you face the same challenges, and sharing this experience not just strengthens your relationship, but also your motivation to keep learning Chinese. Peer pressure can be a good thing too, so even if you're studying independently, teaming up with other learners is a great idea. The second group of important people is Chinese teachers. Who your teacher is and how you relate to them can have a large impact on your motivation to learn. And this can be a very important factor in formal education, where if you have a great teacher, you might be motivated to learn Chinese, but if you have a terrible teacher, you might drop out and choose something else. With the right teacher, you will feel safe, learning is fun, and the journey ahead feels manageable. Here I think having a non-native speaking teacher can be helpful because it's easier as a student to feel that you can do what they did. And I remember this very clearly from when I started learning Chinese, when one of my teachers were a Swedish person and he did not grow up knowing any Chinese. And I thought, okay, if he can do this, so can I. That being said, a good teacher relationship can be very motivating regardless of how the teacher learned Chinese. So the third and final group of important people are native speakers. So communicating with native speakers is one of the main reasons why most people learn Chinese, but socializing and forming relationship of different kinds with native speakers is also one of the most powerful motivations to keep learning. If you live or work in a Chinese-speaking context, the motivation to integrate with people around you can be very strong, and this can power your learning all the way up to true mastery. Even if you're learning Chinese in your home country, you can still, of course, find Chinese people locally or you can meet them online, and these relationships are an important factor for motivation. For beginners, it's also true that these interactions will be very demanding, they require a lot of energy, but the more Chinese you learn, the more relaxing you will find the interaction to be, and you will also gain lots of energy and motivation from interacting with native speakers. I have written more about these things in an article called You Shouldn't Walk the Road to Chinese Fluency Alone, and I will put a link in the show notes. So before ending this episode, I'd like to say a few things about satisfying these basic psychological needs and reaching your goals of learning Chinese. Because the goal of self-determination theory is not to learn Chinese. It is about understanding human behavior and motivation in general. So what I'm saying here, that our goal is not only to fulfill these psychological needs, but to do so while also making sure we engage in activities that allow us to reach our goals of learning Chinese. There needn't be a conflict between the two, but there can be a conflict, so let's look at each of the needs once more briefly and talk about what this conflict might look like and some things to keep in mind. So first, focusing on autonomy is not easy, because being responsible for your own learning takes a lot of time and energy, and the fact that you are making the important decisions doesn't mean that you are making the right decisions. So in essence, being in control is great when you know best. So for example, if it's about deciding what you think is enjoyable, of course you should be in charge. But it's not the case that all methods for learning Chinese are equal and that how much you enjoy them is the only thing you should take into account. Second, focusing on competence can be used as an excuse to avoid challenging yourself. For example, I think one of the main reasons that learner Chinese podcasts contain so much English is that it makes the learners feel safe, but you're certainly much better off focusing on content that is mostly in Chinese, even if this will make you feel less competent. So clearly, you want to challenge yourself, but not so much that you lose motivation to learn. And this is tricky to manage for yourself if you're an independent student, but you can imagine how hard it is to manage this as a teacher as well, when you have many students who are all different. Another thing to keep in mind with competence is that you also need to take your goals for learning Chinese into account. So for example, if you follow your curriculum and you do well, you will get good grades. But if that does not align with your goals for learning Chinese, this type of competence doesn't necessarily help. So let's say that your teacher has you do dictation every week and you do very well on these dictation exercises. This might make you feel competent, but this type of testing might not actually be very indicative of anything important at all. So don't mistake the feeling for being competent with actually being competent. Yes, it's important to feel competent to stay motivated, but as I said, you also want to make sure you're learning the right things. Focusing on relatedness has similar drawbacks if you overdo it. The most egregious mistake you can make as an exchange student or expat is to hang out with other foreigners too much. Yes, indeed, you shouldn't travel the road to Chinese mastery on your own, but you shouldn't camp out on the side of the road with your buddies drinking beer either. Similarly, being on too friendly terms with your teacher might mean that they take their teaching role less seriously, and this is something I often hear students complaining about. Still, these are minor caveats and things that I think most of you realize anyway, but the point in this episode, and I guess the main conclusion, is that being aware of these three psychological needs of autonomy, competence, and relatedness, and doing whatever you can to make sure you satisfy these while also learning Chinese, can really keep you motivated to learn Chinese in the long run. Thank you for tuning in to the Hacking Chinese podcast. If you like this episode, please share it. More information and inspiration about learning and teaching Chinese can be found at hackingchinese.com. See you in the next episode, and until then, good luck with your studies.